Why, you know what that sound means.
What sound is that?
Well, that's the sound of Ken Fletcher playing two guitars at once.
Ooh.
Which
I
means
thought he was playing a 12-string.
He's playing a 12-string and a 6-string.
Oh.
One with his toes. Thanks, Ken, for your amazing guitaring. It's time for Everything Under the Sun here on KD&K. My name's Raleigh Burley. I'll be hosting today's show. And I have two co-hosts. We've got Jeannie Soldern. Hello.
Hello, Raleigh. Beautiful day outside today.
Sure is. We also have Gus Richardson joining us.
I am Gus Richardson. Hello.
And Gus was the author of our Page 2 column this week, which I've already heard a lot of praise for, so great work on that.
I'm glad.
Touching reflection on Gus's time with our Youth News Bureau, which is shaping up, wouldn't you say?
Most definitely.
And our guest today is Nikki Delson, who recently was awarded a AARP Andrus Award for Community Service, which we learned is the highest state-level recognition that the AARP gives. So congratulations, Nikki.
Thank you.
And that's going to be kind of the focus of today's show, but we can, of course, also take it into age-friendly Carbondale and your different initiatives, like improving 133 safety, especially adding crossings in certain areas. And also, I'd love to learn more about you, Nikki. So thanks for joining us.
Happy to share.
My first question is, so you received a big glass award, which you were afraid about dropping during the meeting on Tuesday, the trustee meeting. Where have you placed it? Where is it living now?
On a shelf in our living room, okay. In a place that I don't reach very high to take anything else off the shelf because I am not known for being careful about things that are glass.
Are there other awards on that shelf?
No.
Oh, well, not yet.
Really?
No. There are in a box hidden away somewhere else.
Well, I have to say I'm a little bit surprised by that because you and Ron both, Ron Kokish, who is your husband, have done a lot of community service, activism kinds of things wherever you've lived.
That's true.
You want to talk about the beginnings of that?
The beginnings of activism for me?
Yeah.
So you're not talking about like activism against my parents, right? You're just talking about
community. Well, a lot of times that might be where it starts because I know that was kind of it for me too.
I think I just had the kind of second child in a family, and my brother already had used up the placeholder in the family as the smart, bright, easy to get along with. And then I was second, and so that place was taken up. So I was just way more contentious very early on. And so I think the first community organizing thing that I ever did, I was about 14. But, of course, I didn't think of it in those terms. I just thought of it, something called on me. And I went to school in New York City. It was a very large school. There were 5,000 students. And it was so overcrowded that we were on triple session and very often had to sit two to a seat. And that was at, you know, those old-fashioned desks. And one day I got to school and I see a big bus and a lot of adults getting on the bus. So being curious, I just walked up to them and asked what they were doing. And they said they were going to New York City, to Manhattan, to talk to the mayor of the city of New York to tell him about the overcrowded conditions. And I just kind of flippantly said, well, parents shouldn't be telling them, students should be. And so I got on the bus and went to talk to the mayor of the city of New York.
Was that John Lindsay at that time?
No, it was Wagner, Robert Wagner.
Okay.
It was before Lindsay.
Before Lindsay, yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't remember being afraid or nervous. I just remember feeling good about having my voice and saying what, you know, the perspective was of students. So I think that was the first time, and then whatever just showed up for me, what I got involved in, a rent strike with older adults. Of course, I lived through the 1960s, so it's not hard to imagine.
Plenty of protesting.
Yeah. Whatever we could protest.
So in the article, it mentions your mother. There's a story about your mother and you driving around, and she is talking about on garbage collection day how a certain rug might be good for someone in the neighborhood. And
I was so embarrassed to be in the car with her. But she was an original dumpster diver.
Mm-hmm.
She just never thought anything should go to waste. Of course, they lived through the Depression, so I'm a daughter of a Depression family, and so that really has rubbed off. It wasn't like for ourselves. You know, it was like my family never aspired for more than just being comfortable. But my mother always knew everybody in the neighborhood who was getting to that place of being comfortable. And so whenever she saw something that she thought was useful, that wasn't the only time. I think that was just one of the times that I remembered, because it was a carpet and she needed my help. Mm-hmm. So I had to get out of the car. I was afraid I'd be seen. But she would just, that's just was her personality, is to always be aware of what other people needed and then be able to do that if she could.
Mm-hmm. Well, that really speaks to age-friendly Carbondale. And it kind of took this shift where there was an organization called Senior Matters advocating for seniors in particular. But what's really cool about age-friendly Carbondale is it's a lot of seniors looking at what would be beneficial for the whole community, people with disabilities, young folks, as well as older folks.
Well, that really comes down from AARP, because people think of AARP as just focusing on older adult issues, but there are now 900 age-friendly communities in the United States, and AARP is an independent affiliate of the World Health Organization's Livable Communities, so there's decades of research behind both organizations, and the research shows that if you are planning a community and if you think of the youngest, you're also going to be able to address the needs of the oldest. And we have very similar needs. We need to walk down sidewalks, and caregivers and parents need to walk down with strollers, walking dogs, and kids on in this community on strider bikes.
Mm-hmm.
So we need wide sidewalks and safe sidewalks, as do older adults and people with mobility devices. So AARP age-friendly communities says from 8 to 80, but for us in Carbondale, and my mother lived to 103, and I'm over 80, so I don't think of it in those terms. We really think of from birth to end of life. And that's how a community needs to be focusing on addressing all issues.
So I've got one quick question.
Okay, go ahead.
Turn it over. I saw in the article also that you did live briefly in Newcastle. And so I'm just curious to know more how Carbondale is so fortunate to have received you and Ron as residents here.
Okay, so we really, Newcastle was a second home. Mm-hmm. We were living in Northern California. In Northern California, not like San Francisco, Northern California, like 80 miles south of Oregon.
Okay, like
on the coast during the 1970s, which was probably that community was best known for Humboldt County, California, best known for marijuana growing, illegal at the time. And of course, that was not why we moved there. But so we. My son was already living in the Roaring Fork Valley, and so we were thinking about moving. It was just a time, you know, whatever chapter of our life we wanted to complete in Humboldt County was completed, and my grandchildren there were practically grown. And so we bought a condo in Newcastle to try and check out where we wanted to live. Okay. We knew we were not going to settle in Newcastle because we're skiers and it was too far to travel to ski. And so I lived in a hippie community in the 70s, a little town called Trinidad, California, which was, the population was about 500.
Wow.
But it was near a university. And I, so we were checking out. We couldn't live in Aspen. Basalt wasn't, didn't invite me. And then I met, you know, I just came through Carbondale, and the vibes were very similar to where I had just lived for 37 years. So
okay, cool.
It was very easy transition. I mean, not easy to leave someplace that you had lived for 37 years, but it, that chapter was finished. And this felt like an easy place to be able to settle down.
This isn't super related to what you're saying, but I was looking at some of your quotes here before I showed up, and one I really wanted to hear you talk a little bit more on. You say here, "We don't believe in uncommitted complaining. If you want to complain, go on Facebook. But if you want to change how things are, show up." Could you speak some on that?
Do you ever go on Facebook?
Not really.
Okay.
I'm a little bit too young.
I understand that. And I probably don't know the other platforms that, that your generation uses. Uncommitted complaining is just a waste of time. It just absorbs and takes out of you energy. And at this point in my life, having the ability to be healthy and also look at the road traveled and the mistakes made, and knowing that mistakes made in your generation are not going to be the ones that are going to shape your life, that we get over mistakes and we survive and we go on. But the important thing is to be committed to that which you want to see changed, and committed not by just exploring how miserable you are about what you want to see changed, but to understand that there are ways to make the change happen, and that there are people who have power who can help you do that. It's, I think, finding out who really has the ability to help you do that.
And I would say, because I remember when we did the interview for this article that's in this week's Upper Sun, that you were being given the award at the town trustee meeting on Tuesday night. And you said you would be staying to find out, because they're working on the budget, to find out what kind of resources were being allocated to Highway 133, which you were an integral part of doing the safety study on 133. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, we had been, I think when we first started, when we first created Age Friendly Community, we were concerned with mobility, mostly for ourselves at the time. I mean, it was bad winter. We were climbing over snowbanks, walking in the middle of the street, saw people with carriages and wheelchairs that people, you know, wanted to get from one place, but the snowbank was too hard. They couldn't get over it. And so I had... just prior to that winter, I was on the Bike Pedestrian Trails Commission at the time, and the current chair of Bike Ped, who was also on the commission, but Matt Gork, and I were looking at the intersection at Cowan, just trying to figure out how to change that. We were just counting cars. How many cars went through the stop signs? How many cars couldn't make left turns? How many cars did not recognize pedestrians or cyclists? And I started looking for, I thought that this is a crazy way to do it. We're just counting numbers. Somebody must have created some kind of instrument to allow you to assess a sidewalk. And that's how I found AARP, Age Friendly Communities, because they had what's called a walk audit. And so we had been invested in mobility even before, you know, in the mobility around Carbondale. And because it's small, you would think that that wouldn't be so hard to design a community where mobility and accessibility is possible. And 133, from the time I got here, and certainly much more now because of the amount of traffic, has been congested and dangerous. And so... we just decided we just decided that we should do something about it mm-hmm. without really knowing. I mean, none of us are traffic engineers. None of us had ever done anything like that before, but we all had really good careers and were all pretty successful in what we did and figured we could put our skills together and find those people who we needed to help mentor us to be able to do that.
And who are some of the folks that worked on that with you?
Yeah, in age-friendly or elected officials? Or
anyone you want to shout out?
Everybody. There were so the main people in age-friendly Carbondale who worked on it were myself, Sue Zislis, Ron Kokish, Susan Ray, and Candace Goodwin. Mm-hmm. And we pulled together and did a lot of the walk audits and then figured out which sidewalks were the most dangerous. And Matt Farrar, who is, I'm not sure what his title is, but he's a consultant and I think has an urban planning degree. And I had written a letter actually to the Soper Sun called Dangerous by Design, which comes out of Smart Growth America. And Matt came to us and said, let me help you with this. Mm-hmm. And so he introduced us to the software. And so that helped us. And we did 4 months of gathering data.
Wow.
And then at events and had over 500 people, including more than 11% of the Latino population because it was in Spanish and English. And so we... the software helped us do the raw data, and then we taught ourselves how to use AI to help us analyze the anecdotal information.
What I would say, I know this because I've done multiple articles about age-friendly Carbondale, and even from the very beginnings of it. And one thing that I think is pretty miraculous is the benefits for the Carbondale community for all the volunteer hours. This is strictly volunteer.
Yes.
That have been put in to make Carbondale a better community.
Yeah, I just want to go back and make sure that I gave you the age-friendly people who helped us.
Yeah, go
but
ahead.
I want to say that Jared mm-hmm. Barnes, you know, yeah. P&Z, knows a lot about transportation. Kevin Shoresman. Mm-hmm. And then people that were recommended to us by AARP has a public policy institute, and they also gave us information about who to reach out to. Smart Growth America helped us. So there are, and then so many other people. I'm sure that I'm sorry out there if I have left you out.
Well, I know simultaneously the town was working on its own transportation master plan, and this was quicker to get accomplished and to be presented and is coming with a lot of force, with a lot of data behind it, and making a convincing argument. We're in that same meeting on Tuesday. Several trustees prioritized at least one crosswalk, hopefully next year, being installed for their big projects in 2025.
And that is amazing. I mean, when I talk to other people in age-friendly communities, or AARP gave us fellowships to America Walks, the Walking College, which Sue Zislis and myself attended for 6 months, they said, you'll never get CDOT to allow it. Every single roadblock that they put in the way, I'm talking that the narrative mm-hmm. about CDOT, if you work from an old narrative, you never get any kind of change. Mm. So the relationship building has been the key to everything that we have done.
That's wise.
And that the trustees have opened up and accepted that somebody outside of a consultant, a paid-for consultant, can provide something as good as what a consultant can provide, I think has enabled us to really feel honored.
Mm-hmm. For folks just joining us here on Everything Under the Sun, our guest is Nikki Delson, and we're talking about her recent AARP Andrus Award for Community Service that was presented on Tuesday. There's an article about it in this week's paper. And we have about 7 minutes left in today's show before an interview with Perry Will is going to air right at 4:30. Gus, just to put you on the spot, is there any questions just in reflecting on what Nikki shared with us?
Yeah, sure. So I haven't done all that much activism on my own, and I've always been curious to ask someone that's so entrenched in it as you are, is there any self-doubt that, like, makes it difficult to have all this confidence and have all this trust that you're doing the right thing in the situation?
Oh, I always wonder if I'm doing the right thing. that's always right in the front. I don't live in self-doubt.
Sure.
I mean, I've had a career where I think everybody that I know at this age, looking back, has felt like, because we've been successful, that we're really imposters. You know, that we've learned to be able to make the connections that we have in order to be successful. I don't have self-doubt about trying.
Right.
And I don't really have a lot of self-doubt about being successful. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm not, it's not a tragedy. Do you know? It's just, I've given it my all. I've given, I've connected with people who want the same thing that I do. I'm not alone in this. So how could it be bad?
Right.
You know, I rarely go out there feeling like I'm all alone. Mm-hmm. I can not really remember a time feeling like I was alone in this, because I think that the core values of most people are very, very similar. Right. We may come to things from in different points in time, but I think all of us want safety for, using 1-3, all of us want safety, all of us want protection, all of us want a healthy life, all of us want to live in a vibrant community. Mm-hmm. We may have different politics or divisions, but I don't think that matters. So self-doubt, I get over it pretty fast.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And to build on that question, is it then difficult to deal with opposition when you feel that we all have the same moral system?
I don't know exactly how to answer that. Mm-hmm. I think opposition is going to be there.
Right.
I mean, when we did, for example, we're talking about 133, but the first thing that we did that was about mobility, that there was a lot of opposition, was about 8th Street. Mm-hmm. And there were people who said, don't take my parking space away. And what we did, we had to confront that's not your parking space. That belongs to the community. That's public property, And so I guess I'm not afraid of conflict. I grew up in a big family where the loudest voice is the one that got heard.
Yeah, you can't be.
So I don't shy away from conflict. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that answers your question. I'm afraid of opposition. I don't think I would run for trustee. I think that I would be, that would not be a comfortable place for me to be. But in terms of community engagement, I'm not concerned about that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, we have just about 3 minutes left in today's show. Is there anything else reflecting on this award? You were also featured in another article in this week's paper about some mediation talks to sort of restore the community fabric around international issues. Anything else you'd like to speak to today?
I would love to get people who spend a lot of time just bemoaning what isn't in Carbondale or what annoys them about in Carbondale to participate in Carbondale. I think that we live in a phenomenal community. Certainly the community has issues about, particularly now, about growth. But if you just complain, nobody's going to really care except other people who complain. Yeah.
And is that something, like, I notice age-friendly, it is a lot of older adults. And so to me, that says something about the wisdom that's accrued and perhaps, like, getting over a failure of, or a fear of failure or opposition, and just working toward what you want to see because that's the right thing to do.
You know, they're one of the wonderful gifts of being older is the perspective that you have on looking back and knowing what really matters. And the fact that we've changed the narrative in Carbondale from thinking only of older adults as like these people who are going to just absorb all of the resources of the community because we're all going to be so needy. I think we've really changed that narrative to looking at older adults as the resources. Mm-hmm. And there are certainly going to be times when I need more than I need right now. But right now, here we are.
Mm-hmm.
So.
A big thanks to the age-friendly Carbondale group for all that they give.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any final thoughts, Jeannie?
Well, I don't know. I find Nikki to be quite an inspirational person. And I actually am not all that far behind in age from what Nikki is. And so I do agree with a lot of what she said. It's easy to stand on the sidelines and throw rocks. It's harder. It takes much more energy and being vulnerable at times to get in the middle of a situation and find solutions. So kudos to Nikki. That's all. I'll end on that.
Well, thank you so much, Nikki, and thank all of you, Gus, Jeannie, for joining us today on Everything Under the Sun.